Your Body is an Anchor by ARC, read by Cookie Mom 6067. You really don't have to do this, Hobbs says, for the fifth time that day. Dream tilts his head. Certainly not. But I thought we agreed that I would go with you. I invited you, Hob points out. He adjusts his collar in an uncharacteristic twitch of nervousness. He usually conducts himself with such confidence. Don't think I expected you to say yes. Do you now not wish for me to accompany you? Dream frowns. He fears he has reached the end of his understanding of the human dynamics herein. Hob had asked him to attend the end-of-year faculty reception where he was elected to speak. Dream said yes. Yet ever since, Hob has brought up the matter of Dream's presence innumerable times, as though to question whether his interest in such a thing is genuine. The whole of it is quite puzzling. No, no, of course I want you there. Hob pauses beneath the wash of yellow light from the street lamp and takes Dream's hand. He brings it to his mouth and presses a kiss to the knuckles. It's a courtly gesture from days long since past, and Dream feels his frown fade. It's just, we've never done something like this before, and my department can be a lot. I don't want to subject you to anything unpleasant. It's adorable, truly, how protective Hob acts sometimes. How he worries for Dream's state of mind and comfort, as though Dream might be any other man. Once, such presumption would have infuriated him. Now that they are committed to one another, it is impossibly endearing. I battled Lucifer Morningstar in single combat in hell, Dream reminds him, voice mild. He squeezes Hob's fingers between his own. I do not believe that an academic party will put me out, my love. Okay, good point. Hob looks back at him a little dazed, a lot infatuated. You're right, of course. I often am, Dream agrees, and Hob laughs. They resume their walk, the twilight hour sweeping over the stately old university buildings. The reception is being held in a big room at the top of the building that houses the history and English departments. When they step off the elevator, a burst of chattering talk and laughter meets their ears. They go down the hall together, following the noise. If you want to leave at any point, just give me a sign and we'll... Hob, Gadling, Dream says. He lets one eyebrow climb. Yeah, sorry, Hob says, and puts his hand on the door to push it open. Then he says under his breath, as if to himself, in for a penny. Several dozen people are already gathered in the space, a classroom by day with the chairs and desks now cleared out. A long table on the side is host to a smattering of appetizers, while another table holds bottles of wine. That table is more popular, with a line of attendees waiting for access. Dream recognizes many of Hob's colleagues from the days in which he has stopped by to see his lover giving lectures or to visit his office, but he has never spoken to them before. There are some much younger faces as well, the graduating history majors invited to fate, the end of their term. Of course, Dream knows everyone in this room already from when they slip into his realm at night. It seems that every eye snaps to them upon their entrance. Dream is not surprised. He often has that effect when walking into a space, be it a Roman arena or a London coffee shop. He and Hob make for a handsome pair, and they are well attired tonight. Hob said the dress code was not meant to be formal, so he wears dark jeans with a white button down and a tweed jacket, an odd combination, Dream thinks, but times and fashions have changed. Dream is in a soft black sweater of the finest cashmere, black slim-cut trousers, black boots giving a mirror shine. They are late in arriving tonight because when he first emerged in this outfit, Hob had delayed them by peeling him out of it. Hob grins in return to the waves and hails directed his way. Dream takes his arm so that there will be no doubt as to the nature of their relationship, and Hob tucks Dream's hand in warm against his side. An older woman, tiny in stature, with round spectacles and flyaway hair, detaches from the crowd to greet them. Professor Gadling, she says. She has a pinched face and an air of brusque formality. But as she gazes upon them, she is thinking about a beautiful woman that she loved in Paris 50 years ago, and how the sunlight used to illuminate her black hair against a cornflower blue pillowcase. Dream smiles at her, and as though caught off guard, she smiles faintly back. Professor Ambrose says, "Huh, may I introduce my partner, David Murphy? David, this is the chair of our department, Linda Ambrose." "Robert speaks highly of you, madam," Dream says, shaking her hand when it is offered. "I enjoyed your recent book on the Crusades as viewed through the lens of modern conspiracy theory and propaganda, a most refreshing reexamination of that unfortunate era." "Oh," says Professor Ambrose, blushing like the schoolgirl she once was. "Well, thank you. I advise that you join the line for drinks now. The program will begin shortly." She nods. "Lovely to meet you, David." "Robert." Hobbs steers them toward the drinks line, and only once they are there does he exhale. "I could kiss you," he says. 4 years teaching here, and she's never called me Robert." "I believe you already kissed me several times today," Dream says, but he is glad to have pleased Hob. Hob pours them two glasses of red wine. The wine is poor in quality and is served in plastic cups, which border on uncivilized, but Dream holds his politely. The rest of their interactions proceed apace. Hob introduces him. Dream reads the person or persons he is presented to, and he responds in kind. Hob deftly navigates the questions about their personal life. "We met in a pub. Can you believe I caught this one's eye? I still can't." People wheel away from their orbit, dazzled. Some find themselves lingering, fascinated, staring at Dream somewhat slack-jawed. Hob starts to bite his lip in an effort not to laugh as they attract a growing circle of admirers. "Professor Gadling," says a bright-eyed, handsome young man with a wicked smile. "Wherever have you been hiding him?" He has sauntered over with a fresh glass of wine for Hob, which Hob accepts with a grateful look. Dream, still holding his untouched glass, gives the youth a once-over, then raises his eyebrows a fraction. "Oh, he comes and goes as he pleases," Hob says. "David, this is Carl, one of my advisees. He's about to graduate with full honors." "Thanks to you," Carl says, batting long eyelashes. His attention shifts to Dream. "You simply must know that Professor Gadling is the best teacher I've ever had. I'm hardly alone. Everyone thinks so." "When Robert is passionate about something, he is unwavering in his commitment," Dream agrees. Now it's Hob, who is blushing like a schoolgirl. "What do you do?" asks Carl. "He's a forward fellow. His thoughts are far more forward than that." "David's an artist," Hob cuts in smoothly, "one of the most gifted alive, though he'll say I'm biased." "I do make art," Dream concurs. "How perfectly fascinating," says Carl, tongue emerging to wet his lips. "What's your medium?" "Sand," says Hob, and takes Dream's elbow. "If you'll excuse us, Carl, it looks like we're meant to gather for the presentations now." They head across the room to where the milling crowd has begun to organize itself into a more attentive pose for listening. "Carl Phillips wishes to be had by us both," Dream says low. His dreams are quite explicit, even in waking hours. "Is that something that interests you?" Hob chokes on a sip of wine, so much so that Dream pounds a hand against his back. "God, no," says Hob when he can breathe again. "That's my student, darling, and even if he weren't, I'm not keen to share you, even for a night." "Nor I you," Dream admits. "But well do I understand what it is to want you. Perhaps I will give him a good dream." "Give him a dream about someone his own age," Hob mutters, but his expression when he turns to Dream is a stunning mix, soft and sweet, bold and starkly lustful. He drops his voice to a whisper. "You extraordinary, gorgeous thing. You're driving me crazy. If you keep carrying on like this, I'm going to lose my job because of how loudly I'll be fucking you in the supply closet." "Carrying on like what?" Dream asks, curious, at the same time that he basks in the heat of Hobbs' unbridled need for him. It's wildly intense, always, and also more sincere than any desire directed at Dream before. Hob wants nothing from him, save him. his presence, not his status or power. They have been lovers for months now, since the day Dream found him again at the new inn, and that ardor has not cooled. If anything, it increases daily. This is new territory in Dream's experience, but then again, he never took a lover that he knew for hundreds of years, who was fascinated by him for as long. Dream will now admit that he was fascinated in return. Hob is unique and quite special, and Dream no longer has any qualms about acknowledging him as such. Gone are the days when this passion for a human felt like a weakness. Hob is instead a pillar of support, wonderfully present. He is also remarkable in bed, and Dream supposes would also be thus in the supply closet scenario that he mentions. "Your being the most charming creature in the galaxy," Hob answers. "I've a feeling I'm about to start receiving a lot more invites to professional dinner parties contingent on my bringing my lovely partner along." "Then we shall attend them," Dream says. "I am glad to be on your arm, Hob Gadling." Hob's sideways glance is scorching. "You're going to be on a lot more than that when I get you alone again." Dream opens his mouth to respond, but that's when Professor Ambrose takes her place behind the lectern. The evening is intended as a celebration of the past academic year. Professor Ambrose speaks to highlight the faculty's varied accomplishments, mentioning books and article publications, praising new research. She cites promising statistics on how, bucking recent trends in the humanities, interest in their department has increased exponentially in the last few years, as has the declaring of history majors and overall attendance. Dream knows he should not say so out loud, but he believes the success is due in large part to Hob's arrival at the school. His lover is exceedingly popular here, with classes that are always over-enrolled. Hob agonizes about not being able to let eager students in, and he often allows unenrolled guests to attend his lectures. The rooms are jam-packed with spillover in the aisles and no standing room in the back. His classes and unorthodox teaching style had become legendary. "There's no one like him," Dream hears students murmur. "It's like he was there, the way he talks about history." It's a strange thing, being proud of someone for so mundane a position. But Dream is proud. Of all the varied paths Hob has walked in his many lifetimes, this is the calling that suits him best and that he seems happiest pursuing. That he is brilliant at it only speaks to its suitability. Dream puts his hand on the small of Hob's back. He hopes the gesture will communicate his thought process and his pride. Hob cants his head a little and looks at him as though Dream has plucked down the moon and fashioned it into an ornament for him, which Dream could arrange to do should he like. Now Professor Ambrose praises the students, showcasing their final projects and dissertations, their awards won, and those who will be going on to programs in advanced degrees. Everyone claps. A few of the more inebriated students make a much louder clamor. Then it is time for the reason why Dream is in attendance tonight. As per tradition, the history majors voted to elect two faculty members to speak. One is the woman who moves to the lectern now, a colleague that Dream knows Hob is fond of, and the other is Hob. At Dream's side, Hob watches riveted as the other professor launches into a fiery oration. She specializes in the history of labor movements, and she implores the students to take the knowledge they have acquired and use it to fight for better conditions around them and to never compromise their integrity. The applause for her speech lasts a long time. When Hob goes to step up thereafter, he is still clapping. "Thank you, Nina. Even though you're a damned hard act to follow," Hob says into the microphone. He has an instantly magnetic manner in front of crowds. Dream remembers eras when Hob stood as a revolutionary firebrand himself. Hob's eyes track over the soon-to-be graduates. "If you take one lesson from this department, I hope it is this one. As students of history, and we all remain students, the most important thing to do with what we learn is ensure we do not repeat the mistakes of the past. We keepers of what came before are vital to building a brighter future." It's true that our time seems dark and can feel hopeless, Hobb goes on. Yet if we could ask someone who lived through centuries long before this one, they would tell you that it always feels like this. We are always on the cusp of the world ending and beginning anew. But that person from the past would also gaze around this room right now with eyes full of stunned admiration at how far we've come. The rights so hard won. The seemingly improbable feats we've accomplished. They would not see this age as dark, but rather rife with untold possibilities. I ask you to imagine how 300 years from now, 600, we too would gaze on that generation and be similarly awestruck by their wondrous capabilities. We are ever moving forward, even when it appears we are stuck in the mire. Hobb's voice has gained a ringing quality to it. After the fashion of the best orators, he seems to be addressing each person in the room individually, his attention focused solely upon them. What's most remarkable about humanity is our capacity for change, and the fact that each of us, each and every one, has the chance to reflect on what failed before and to envision a better way to be. I mean that on both a societal scale and for ourselves. We get to choose which direction we're going, and that is a gift of great magnitude that we often overlook. Dream is watching Hobb intently, so that when Hobb catches his eye, their gazes lock and hold. I've been thinking a lot lately about past mistakes and how they remain essential parts of us, but also how we needn't be ruled by them, Hobb says. It's tempting to remember only the bad things we've done, the awful ways we've screwed up. We carry the worst of ourselves on our backs, and we forget the good, the ways we treasure our friends and partners and children, the fact that we can create art and delight in it, the kindness we show to strangers, how, again and again in every age, people refuse the status quo when it is hurtful and demand a more just world. There is so much goodness in us, and there is limitless potential. Our dreams cannot be bounded. They have no end. And so long as we can dream, we are unstoppable, because dreams are hope. And there is no known way to counter hope. It is the strongest force in the universe. Hobb clears his throat. The love of my life taught me that, and I am grateful every moment of every day for him and for being lucky enough to learn such a lesson. Thank you, Dee. There are more eyes on Dream now, but all he can see is Hobb. Someone wolf whistles. It's probably Carl. It's an honor to be chosen as your speaker, just as it has been a great honor to teach you and watch you become thoughtful scholars and able dreamers. When I look at you, I know that the future is in good hands. Hobb's face splits into a grin, a flash of white teeth. And now I will stop being quite so serious. The other nice thing about a history degree is that you'll be absolutely smashing at pub quizzes. See you there. The room erupts into laughter and applause, and soon after that, Hobb is swarmed by his students. Dream is content to drift around the periphery, buoyed by the brightness and warmth of the thoughts that Hobb's speech provoked in the room. At length, he returns to Hobb's side, squeezing between other admirers. Dream has existed for a very, very long time, an incalculable span, but it is still a novel thing to watch Hobb's eyes kindle at the sight of him. There you are, Hobb says. He leans in to peck a kiss against Dream's mouth, slides one arm around to touch at Dream's far hip. The students remaining stare at them with equal parts wistfulness and awe. But they melt away at last, leaving Dream and Hobb as alone as they can be, in a space where everyone is watching them. Thought I might have lost you. No, says Dream, permitting himself to lean against Hobb's solid strength. I do not think you will lose me, Robert Gadling, so long as you mean to live forever, and I am endless. Hobb works his jaw like he has no words to say in response to this declaration. Then he says, We really, really need to get out of here. I am in agreement, says Dream, or else we could rendezvous in the supply closet that you mentioned. There is nothing I want more, Hobbs says, believe me, but I'd really like to keep this job, and at this point, there's no way we could sneak away and come back. Don't look now, love, but you've amassed quite a fan club. Dream does not need to look to know that the majority of the party's attention is focused upon them. Not me, he tells Hob. It is true that some of them carnally desire the form that I am wearing, but the admiration here is for you. These people adore you. He tilts close to Hob's ear as though to tell him a secret, using the opportunity to brush his lips there. I am amongst their number. Goose flesh erupts and travels down Hob's skin at the touch of Dream's lips, the sound of his words. Okay, says Hob, visibly gathering himself. He takes Dream's hand. Okay, come on, we're doing a round of goodbyes. Regretfully, you have a headache. I do not. Dream blinks and then smiles. Ah, yes, it is most unfortunate, this headache. They begin to take their leave, but even that goes on a while. Everyone wishes to have the chance to say something to them, to Hob or to Dream or to them both. As Hob predicted, they receive many invitations to upcoming events or proposals that they gather together for spontaneous ones. Hob manages them graciously, neither confirming nor denying the invites. The last to see them out is Professor Ambrose, who shakes Dream's hand and tells him of a book that might interest him if his tastes regularly run to medieval history. Dream has read it already. Every book ever written or conceived has a place in his library, but he thanks her with enthusiasm. Then she shakes Hobb's hand and says, Robert, I'm due to take a leave of absence next year in the spring semester. Let's set a meeting next week to discuss whether you'd like to take over as interim chair. Thank you, Linda, Hobbs says. Dream can feel how he is startled and then the surge of pride that follows thereafter. I'll put something on your calendar. It feels as though they've run a gauntlet by the time they reach the elevator. Hob hasn't let go of Dream's hand. When the elevator arrives, Hob tugs Dream in after him, jams at the closed door button repeatedly with his thumb, and then kisses him like he's been underwater and Dream's mouth means coming up for air. Dream kisses him back, winding his arms around Hob's neck and pressing into his body, seeking the closeness denied to them all night. Hob backs him up against the wall, kisses down along Dream's jaw, over his throat. Tell me not to press the emergency stop button, Hob says. I have to have you right now, but that feels a bit like overkill. Then we'd be trapped in here. You should not, press the emergency stop button. Dream tells him, if we walk quickly, we will be home within 15 minutes. It will be far more comfortable to have me there. Yes, Hob says, drawing away after looking at the base of Dream's ear, though he pauses to look into Dream's eyes. Home. They walk at a brisk pace. The streets of London, so well known to them both that they could make the trip blindfolded. Dream wonders when he began to think of Hob's flat above the new inn as a home for him. Certainly the dreaming is his realm, and his palace there is his domain. But most of its rooms are vast and empty, and they do not contain Hob, save when Dream guides him there from a dream. He has been doing that quite a bit as of late, even when his own physical form rests beside Hob's in the waking world. They are so enamored of each other's company that they are seldom apart. Surely that urge will fade somewhat as years pass by, Dream thinks. But at the moment, they both seem resolved and of one mind about it. I did not have the chance to tell you, Dream says, as the blessed shape of the new inn emerges within sight. Your speech. You were magnificent. Saw Mark Twain lecture in London in 1879, picked up a few oratorical tricks, Hobbs says, deflecting praise, as he often does these days. He has learned modesty at an advanced age. Still, he sends Dream a sideways glance to be sure. It wasn't too much. Your words were important, and they inspired many who were listening, Dream says. Hob unlocks a side door that leads to a back staircase that will take them up to the flat. If they go in through the pub, both of them know they will be waylaid by too many good-natured people keen to drink with them, and neither are in the mood to drink. I did not expect to be made part of it. Yeah, says Hob and flushes just a little. They climb the stairs, side by side. Sorry about that, didn't mean to put you on the spot. I believe that you did, Dream says, but he's smiling. I do not mind being acknowledged as such, not if it is the truth. Hob has the key to the front door half turned, but he pauses then and turns back. His eyes are enormous. The love of your life, Dream says softly. That is quite a declaration to make, Hob Gadling, when one considers how many lives you've lived and how many still await you. Dream, Hob says, all at once gone serious. He reaches for him, puts his hands on Dream's shoulders. Morpheus, Lord Shaper, Oniros, Sandman, Lord of the Dreaming. You by any name, you. Surely you can read in me that it is true. You are such that my own small mind can barely hold the concept, and I know you will exist long after this world is gone and me with it. I don't expect any oaths from you. But you must know that for me, you're it. It's always been you. And it never won't be you. And it feels wonderful to fucking say it. To be named so many times and with such conviction. It's an old magic, though Hob is unaware of what he's done. Dream feels more present, more drawn into the body he inhabits than he has in a very long time, perhaps ever. He's rooted there by a man who knows how to invoke the essence of who he is, knows him well enough to call for it. When Dream lifts a hand to touch Hob's cheek, the warmth and stubble he can feel are stunningly tangible to his perception. Dream kisses him. Because there's little else to do when one has been summoned in a ritual not of binding but of love. Hob's mouth opens beneath his and Dream sweeps his tongue in to taste the lingering echo of his names. When he pulls back, it is the barest fraction of a space. If you would lay claim to me. Dream says, you had better unlock the door first. The door hits the wall with an explosive impact when Hob shoves it open, and a louder thud when Hob kicks it closed behind them. Hob has Dream in his arms, half carrying him, half walking him inside. The bedroom seems too far away, so they fall onto the living room couch, a big yielding thing of black leather. Hob is atop him, hands running up under Dream's sweater. Don't you dare vanish your clothes, he says into Dream's ear. I've been thinking about taking this off of you since you put it back on. He ducks down, lifts an edge of the sweater so that his head is underneath, and from there kisses Dream's navel up to one nipple, which he takes into his mouth. Dream laughs around a moan. Yes, he hasn't been more inside this earthly skin than he is now. If you stay under there, I cannot see you. But then you won't know what I'll do next, Hob says, muffled beneath cashmere. I have the element of surprise. His teeth graze over the other nipple, followed by the hot lap of his tongue, and Dream arches up against him. Hob! All right, no more teasing, Hob says, and reemerges. His hair is full of static, floating here and there. To Dream's eyes, he seems crowned in tiny flashes of lightning. He pushes the sweater up and off as Dream lifts his arms, obliging. Then Hob shucks his own jacket and shirt, followed by his shoes and jeans. He undoes the button and zipper on Dream's slacks more slowly and eases them off as slow, kissing every revealed inch down to Dream's toes. It seems to Dream it is almost the action of lifting back a veil. Hob settles between Dream's legs, each hand gripping a thigh and kneading there, his gaze tracking down Dream the way a man who is ravenous regards a feast. Hob's strong, virile body with its dark chest hair, arms corded with muscle, and ever-ready cock never fails to entice Dream in return. "Did I happen to mention," Hob says, and folds over so that the last words are spoken against Dream's cock, "that this was one of the best nights I've ever had. I would know because I've had more than 200,000 of them for comparison." He looks up Dream's cock, then takes him deep into his throat. He is better at this than some gods of sex that Dream has encountered. Hob has more practical experience, more practice. But Dream knows that, 600 plus years of experience notwithstanding, it feels so exceptional because Hob wants him above all other things. Every ounce of Hob's energy and focus are engaged in the act of cock sucking, because it is Dream's cock. Even after their months together, Dream is amazed by such dedication, and his hands tangle in Hob's wild, lightning-filled hair for something to hold on to. Hob brings him to pleasure once like that, relentless in the pursuit. Dream was right. Some greater part of him was pulled into this bodily form by Hob's invocation in the hallway, for this is a new feeling, to be so concentrated in one place, so grounded into an approximation of sinew and bone. It appears that Hob realizes it also, halfway through swallowing Dream down. Dream is more tactile and expressive, unable to suppress his gasps of encouragement, hands pulling insistently at Hob's hair. This only causes Hob to redouble his efforts so that when Dream spills into his waiting mouth, the pleasure of release is also more acute and exquisite than it has been before. Hob draws off with care and a kiss to the head of Dream's cock. His eyes, round and lust dark, flick up to meet Dream's. "What's this, sweetheart?" Hob asks, moving to balance over him. The long, thick length of Hob's hard cock presses firm against Dream's hip, but Hob stays patient. "I know you didn't have a drop of that awful wine, yet one might almost believe that you're drunk with abandon." Dream smiles, well, dreamily. "In a way, perhaps. When you named me, you called me closer here into this body. Names have great power, and you used many of mine." "Oh, is that so?" Hob's eyes are shining now, filled with fascination and mischief, alongside his ever-present desire. All of a sudden, they are shifting in place. Hob sits up and back, and through a mix of prompting and lifting and manhandling, he manages to settle Dream in his lap. Then his mouth is back, open and wet and dragging along Dream's collarbone. "And if I were to name you again, Lord of the Dreaming?" Hob breathes. His mouth is everywhere. He seems to touch everywhere. His voice wraps around Dream, around and around. "If I were to say, Morpheus, that I love only you." Dream gasps anew as he floods through the vessel that Hob is worshiping. It is as though Hob has opened a channel into the dreaming, and more of Dream pours down to be felt and to feel on earth. "If I were to say, Sandman, that your name is also the name of my love." Without conscious thought, Dream feels himself shift to readiness to be had, and he rocks up on his knees, grasps Hob's cock, and fits him into place. He needs no preparation. His body responds to what he needs, which is Hob. Hob makes handles of Dream's hips, presses eagerly inside of him, then holds still as Dream lowers down. Hob's sigh is reverent as he watches Dream's face. "If I were to pledge, Lord Shaper, that I am yours, body, mind, soul, heart, cock. Fuck, to feel you around me like this, it's... If I were to ask you, Oneiros, to also be mine, what would you answer?" Dream throws his head back in a silent cry, silent only because there is too much welling up within him to give voice to. Hob, too, is now within him. And Dream moves on his cock, lifts and falls, steadied by Hob's hands. For a time, He rides Hob quickly, near frantic, the sensations coursing through him so strange and spectacular that he tries to sample them all at once. Making love in the dreaming is a far more ethereal endeavor, and never before has a human conjured him into being in the waking world quite like this. Hob has been inside him countless times, but this is the first time that Dream feels it in the very heart of him. Hob fucking, loving, not just an avatar, but all of him. Though Dream is inconceivably vast, for these moments he is contained, and willingly so. He slows down, at length, enough to think properly about the words Hob chose. You do not seek to claim me, then. Instead, you ask. Hob nods. His mouth is ajar, and he's staring up at Dream as though he's glimpsed the naked sun. He is shown the restraint of 20 men, 100, 1,000, in not trying to seek his own pleasure, but instead watch Dream take his. Hob swallows. When he speaks, he sounds parched. I wouldn't try to keep you any longer than you wished. I'm the luckiest man alive, and I'm no longer greedy. I only ask that you be mine should you like to call yourself that for a while, alongside other titles you have worn. Dream stops his motion, holds Hob buried inside of him. He rests his forehead against Hob's. Ask me once more, he whispers. Use my true name. I would have you and love you, Hob says. All my days, Dream of the Endless. Yes, Dream says simply. That is an easy question to answer, Robert Gadling, for I am already yours. Hob's eyes snap open full wide and a gorgeous smile turns his mouth. He puts his arms around Dream and reels him somehow still closer, thrust joyfully inside of him as his lips find Dream's. Hob is extremely good at waiting. Is perhaps the most patient man to have lived. But Dream thinks he has waited long enough for his satisfaction tonight. Lay me back down, Dream manages to say between tongue-twisting kisses. If this be a sort of wedding bed for us, I would like you to take me upon it. Hob flips them with able grace, not pausing to withdraw from Dream. He is held fast by Dream's thighs, and he slides still further inside him as he rolls his hips. He's smiling against Dream's neck. We have an actual bed, dearest heart, to be a sort of wedding bed, Hob says. But he gives no indication that he is liable to move anywhere else. He fucks Dream the way they discover they both liked best on the day it took 230,000 days to find their way to, smooth and certain with a rhythm as unceasing as the waves, as Dream rises to meet him. Hob gets a hand around Dream's cock hard again for him, and he strokes as he rocks in deeper, then deeper still. Do you not remember? Dream presses his head into the leather of the couch as his pleasure crests. Hob, yes, love. Do you not remember that this was our first bed, too? The first time we were together, we did not make it to the bedroom either. Hob laughs, breathless as he speeds his thrusts, his hold on Dream. I'll have to take your word for it, he says. I was shaking like a leaf to finally touch your hand. I think my brain shorted out the first time I was inside you, rocketed straight into the cosmos. Dream pushes his fingers through Hob's hair. You were still very good. I'll give you a dream of it to refresh your memory. Do that. Hob manages, but now let's make a different memory. Come with me. No sooner does he speak the words than Dream's body reacts in kind. They are in sync for one perfect moment, perfectly whole. Dream twines himself around Hob as a fierce elation runs through him. It is a new kind of ecstasy, but so too is it new for Dream to be this much on earth by choice. Because he was called for. And asked, and he answered. His heart, such as it were, is entrusted to Hob Gadling's keeping, not to be locked away or limited, but to be treasured. In turn, Dream will keep Hob within him, long after the point where his love pulses inside with a bliss-born moan and rests at last. Dream will keep him for all of Hob's days, as he has sworn. And after that, should Hob decide, he may take his place at Dream's side in the dreaming. But there is space and time, many centuries, even millennia, to pass before they need consider that. Now they are but two bodies entangled in an old city on a blue planet. They are mingled sweat and breath on a couch in a flat over a pub that Hob built so that Dream could find him again. Hob pulls out but stays within the circle of Dream's arms. He presses a kiss, open mouth, to Dream's cheek, then closes his teeth over Dream's lower lip. Dream hums his approval. "Have I told you today," Hob says, lifting his head sometime later to look at him, "that I'm in love with you?" 9 times, by count, Dream responds. There are stars in Hob's eyes when he grins. Dream realizes they are reflecting his own. "Let's make it an even 12, says Hob. His eyebrows climb with mirth. "I love you, I love you, I love as I love you," Dream returns. He tips his head. "This is a curious human custom. Is it not enough that we are now sworn and content in one another? Why do you speak it so often?" "Because I love you more each day. And in new ways," Hob says, around a yawn, the excitement and exertions of the last few hours finally catching up with him, "and perhaps to remind myself that this is real and not just a dream." "Just a dream," Hob laughs. "An unfortunate figure of speech. You know what I mean." "I think you should go to sleep, Hob Gadling," says Dream, his tone arch, "and I will show you just a dream." Says Hob, his eyes sliding shut. "Do you promise you'll be there?" "I spent the night in your world," Dream tells him. He lifts his hand to dust the finest film of sand over them both. "It is only fitting that you should spend the night in mine." Hob is soon asleep against him on the couch, an arm and a leg slung across Dream, his hair soft where it touches Dream's cheek. Dream stays like that a while to remember this feeling of being pulled to earth so willingly, of wanting to be caught fast. But in the dreaming, Dream is already waiting at the gate to greet him. Hob arrives smiling. "Well, if it isn't the love of my life," says Hob. "Fancy seeing you here." "Hello," says Dream, and links their arms. "Would you like to go to a party? I'm thinking of hosting one at the palace." "Oh?" Hob pulls him close as they stroll the green outskirts of Dream's domain. "Who will be there?" "Everyone you've ever wanted to meet," says Dream. "They'll be waiting for you." Hob considers this. He looks especially beautiful in the dreaming. The realm, which is Dream, adores the sight of him. "That's kind of you, darling. But what if I only want to meet you?" Dream purses his lips. "I suppose," he says, thinking through it, "I suppose I could have myself appear as I did in the centuries before. All the times I should have let myself love you, Hob Gadling, as I do now. 6 more dreams. Attired as you once knew me. Would that be to your liking?" Hob stops short. There is no need to breathe, but he still seems to struggle for breath. Did you say 6 of you?
8, really,
says Dream. "There is the me that sorely missed meeting you in 1989, and there is me as I am now. Yes, 8 of me.
"You can do that."
"This is the dreaming," Dream reminds him. He tries not to smile outright at Hob's stunned expression. "We may do anything we choose."
"Then what the hell are we waiting for?"
Hob, Dream thinks, has never looked so thrilled, save when Dream first reached across the table at the new inn and took his hand. Dream hopes that Hob will always look this happy beside him here. Now it is Hob who takes his hand in order to hurry them up the pathway toward another kind of party. Dream, laughing, lets the love of his life lead the way. The end.